Billionaire J.B. Pritzker will face off against billionaire Governor Bruce Rauner in the governor's race this fall. Last night, Governor Rauner squeaked out a win against State Representative Jeannie Ives.
I am honored and humbled by this victory. You have given me the chance to win the battle against the corruption that plagues Illinois.
And on the Democratic side, J.B. Pritzker won big against Chris Kennedy and State Senator Daniel Biss.
I'm J.B. Pritzker, and I'm going to beat Bruce Rauner. And together, we're going to put Springfield back on the side of working families.
We saw voters throughout Illinois turn out to vote for our next attorney general and for congressional candidates. Today, we go through all of the results and ask what it means for our two major parties. And as always, you're welcome to join the conversation. Our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. We'll get started just after the latest news.
I want to take a page from the youth of this country tonight and call BS on the same old playbook.
The election in November will be a choice between someone who will stand up to the machine and someone who has long been part of it.
The establishment Republicans in this state never expected this challenge. Bruce Rauner thought he would could get away with his betrayals, quite frankly.
Cardinal Supich once said, "In a democracy, the voters get the government they deserve." The voters of Illinois have spoken, and now we must follow their lead and give Mr. Pritzker the support that he has earned.
It was a hard campaign where we had some important disagreements, but we agreed on certain things, and we agreed on one very important thing, the absolute essential need for the future of our state for us to come together to defeat Bruce Rauner.
The winners and losers last night, Democratic governor candidate J.B. Pritzker, Republican governor Bruce Rauner, and their opponents, Republican State Senator Jeannie Ives, Democratic primary challenger Chris Kennedy, and Democratic State Senator Daniel Biss. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Welcome to the 21st. We've got the results now after the primary, and it's a battle of the billionaires. J.B. Pritzker versus Bruce Rauner. It was a crazy night with Governor Rauner giving a victory speech before his opponent, State Representative Jeannie Ives, had conceded. While J.B. Pritzker won by a fairly wide margin, Governor Rauner squeaked out a win. So did Congressman Dan Lipinski, where just 2,000 votes separated him from upstart Marie Newman in a race that was watched across the country. We've got all the results for you here. We're going to be talking about congressional races, about the governor's race, about the attorney generals. We're going to start now with a Politico Illinois' Natasha Kurecki, who's with us. Hey, Natasha, welcome back to the 21st.
Thanks for having me.
So, Natasha, what is do you think is the headline or the takeaway from everything that happened yesterday evening?
Oh, Republicans need to rebuild. If you consider all the clips you just played, if you notice, all the Democrats talked about we need to unite in this fight against Rauner. You know, we got to get behind Pritzker. But when you listen to Jeannie Ives, she was still talking about Bruce Rauner and the divisions there. And as you noted, Rauner didn't call her before claiming victory. So there's still a deep-seated, you know, division there between the conservatives in the Republican Party, you know, and Rauner. He couldn't get them in the primary. Now he has to try to bring them back into the fold for the general, and it is going to be a massive task for him.
And I think you can hear the difference tonally last night. Let's just contrast for a moment those two speeches.
I am honored and humbled by this victory. You have given me the chance to win the battle against the corruption that plagues Illinois.
I'm J.B. Pritzker, and I'm going to beat Bruce Rauner. And together, we're going to put Springfield back on the side of working families.
Natasha, that's, of course, Governor Rauner, J.B. Pritzker. I just wanted to play that. Do you think that really encapsulates the tone of the two messages we heard from both campaigns yesterday evening?
Yeah, absolutely. And the enthusiasm there. I mean, if you listened even to Jeannie Ives' concession speech last night, it felt like there was more enthusiasm in that room than in Rauner's. He had a really rough night. I mean, to lose to nearly be upset by someone who had little to no name recognition statewide, just maybe in January even, compared to he is the governor, you know, tens of millions of dollars in getting his name out. It was a really, really difficult night for him. And I think that's what's going to be tricky for him in the future. He's really been running on this, you know, Madigan machine. And at some point, I think voters are going to want to hear a message. What have you done? What do you promise to do? And I think that's where he needs to recalibrate.
When we're talking about recalibrating for the general election, I wanted to just play a longer clip of what J.B. Pritzker said last night about what his message is going to be.
After winning a primary, conventional politicians always attempt to offer independent and Republican voters some watered-down mishmash of policies that neither offend nor enlighten but merely satisfy. As if platitudes can replace passion, as if cowardice can replace candor. Instead, I want to take a page from the youth of this country tonight and call BS on the same old playbook.
That was J.B. Pritzker yesterday evening. Natasha, do we have a sense that J.B. Pritzker is going to now, as we look at a campaign where he faced State Senator Daniel Biskup saying, I'm the progressive candidate in this race, do we now, as they move to the general election, do you see J.B. Pritzker saying, I'm the progressive candidate in this race, vote for me against Bruce Rauner?
Well, you know, the three top contenders, Pritzker, Kennedy, and Biss, have all been calling themselves the progressive candidate. Certainly, you know, Biss had more of the support of the traditional, or not the traditional, but what is now
the Bernie Sanders group. Yeah.
Group. Mm-hmm. Right. But Pritzker, you know, what he has said is he feels he's learning from the Hillary Clinton campaign, which was, you know, what is your message? And, you know, what is your plan? And he, very early in the campaign, put out all of these plans, health care, education, budget, you know. So he feels that he is going to run on substance. You know, of course, all that stuff is going to be taken apart completely. But you know, I talked to Pritzker earlier today, and he said, I'm going to be talking about issues, I'm going to talk about substance, and Rauner is just going to be attacking me because that's all he has. And so Rauner really needs to point to some of the things that he has done already and to more issues or specific plans of what he plans to do. If it's just attacks, it's going to be a really, really long 9 months.
Let's move on to the attorney general's race. Erica Harold won the GOP nomination. She's a Urbana attorney. State Senator Kwame Raoul captured the GOP primary, which was a pretty crowded field of eight candidates.
My father always taught me to be a proud Haitian American. And I don't care what Donald Trump says. I ain't come from no type of hole.
That's State Senator Kwame Raoul in Chicago last night, who will now be the Democratic nominee for Attorney General. Natasha, this was also a race with former Governor Pat Quinn. There were eight candidates on the Democratic side, two on the Republican side. How do you think this race is going to turn out in the general election?
You know, here's another one that is probably going to have a lot of money. What's so interesting about Raoul winning is that he was considered the, you know, machine candidate, quote unquote, ties to Mike Madigan and to John Cullerton in the Senate. And, you know, he prevailed. He beat a former governor of Illinois. But there was also money spent against Quinn, you know, and I expect that is going to continue. It's going to be another one of these rough races where there's a lot of negative advertising. You have two African-American candidates running for attorney general on both sides. So it's going to be a really interesting, race to watch in the near term.
Let's move on to the congressional races. Natasha, the 3rd Congressional District is a race that was watched nationally. Incumbent Dan Lipinski barely held on against Marie Newman. He will now face the neo-Nazi GOP candidate, Arthur Jones. How close was this race, Natasha?
Oh, it was just a nail biter all night. Every time they'd refresh, refresh the results, it went up, 20 votes one way, 30 votes the other way. They were just within, hundreds of votes at very different times. In the end, it was just a couple thousand votes that separated the two. As we wrote this morning in the Lawyer Playbook, that may have been because of this last weekend deployment of pro-life, Susan B. Anthony's group. They flooded the district, 70 people just going out and getting pro-life voters and educating them on the race and getting them out to vote. That may have made the difference. What Newman's side says also hurt them was just low turnout in the South suburbs. They really needed women to come out. They needed, 18 to 34 age group, college educated, that's who they thought their voter was, and they just weren't unable to get enough people out to put her over the top.
And in this case, it was about 2,000 votes, am I right, Natasha?
Right.
Wow, so that was a really close one. One last race I wanted to ask you about, that's the seat, the 4th Congressional District, a seat previously held by now-retiring Representative Luis Gutierrez. Jesus Chuy Garcia, he won that pretty easily, right?
He did win it pretty easily. Chuy Garcia, of course, ran for mayor, and so his name ID is through the roof because of that. So, and he also had the benefit of Luis Gutierrez endorsing him and giving him a leg up over some of the other candidates when Gutierrez suddenly announced that he was going to retire. So that just kind of gave it. He was handing it over to Chuy Garcia. And it was his to lose. So he had a head start. He had name recognition. Sol Flores got involved. She's a real, I think, strong candidate, probably has a future somewhere here in politics.
That's Politico Illinois' Natasha Kurecki. You can also see her writing at Politico Illinois. We'll tweet out Illinois' playbook this morning as well, that newsletter, lots of details about all of the races. Natasha, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Let's move on to the 13th Congressional District. That covers parts or all of 14 counties in central and southwestern Illinois, including Champaign, Springfield, and Bloomington. WILL Managing Editor Brian Moline's in studio with me here in Urbana to talk about the winner of that race. Brian, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan, can you tell us a little bit about her?
Yeah, she's a former fundraiser for U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, lives in Springfield. She made health care her signature issue during this campaign. And I think the biggest surprise here, Nyla, was not necessarily that Londrigan won, but the margin with which she won. She had more than twice as many votes as her nearest contender, Eric Jones, a former Illinois Assistant Attorney General from the metro east area of St. Louis. And she won all 14 counties that you mentioned. I think one thing about the 13th is that typically the way candidates have won is they've really cleaned up in their home area.
In their home areas, which we saw from the other candidates, right? So she was from the Springfield area. Mm-hmm. We had David Gill
from McLean County. You had John Ebel from Urbana here, a University of Illinois professor, Eric Jones from the Metro East.
And that didn't happen.
No, it did not happen at all. She was able to win every single county in that district, which was very impressive.
And she's now facing, I should imagine, she goes up against incumbent Rodney Davis, who ran unopposed. Let me ask you, as we look at this 13th Congressional District, Brian, what do you think made the difference for Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan? Is it that she had the institutional knowledge and the backing of, for example, Senator Durbin, who she had worked for? She had also been a fundraiser for the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. Do you think because of having that campaign and that history that she was able to reach more voters?
I think that was part of it. I can speak to having a teacher in my household who's a member of a teacher's union. She got lots of direct mail pieces, not only from J.B. Pritzker, but from Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan. a few times a week. We would get something in the mail. So that's going on throughout the district. Plus, she did do very well with the fundraising itself. So that allowed her to be on television, I think, maybe a little bit more than the other candidates. And she did a good job of getting throughout the district. She was getting to all points of it. It's a sprawling district. You've got to travel to lots of different places, and I think she did a pretty good job of that.
We've got a little audio of Betsy Dirksen Londrigan yesterday evening. This is the 13th Congressional District. She won the Democratic primary.
You know, we've just been warming up. The real battle for the 13th starts right here, right now.
That's Betsy Dirksen Londrigan, who won of a pretty crowded race, Brian. Last time, Rodney Davis had one person running against him. And that's the real question now. How vulnerable a target will Rodney Davis be in this race?
Well, I don't think there's any question that right now Democrats have the enthusiasm advantage. Overall, though, it's still important to keep in mind that Rodney Davis still does have the financial advantage. He's got more cash on hand. He hasn't had to spend a lot of money.
Right. He had no opponent, so he really didn't have to spend anything in this primary.
Exactly. So he's got a little bit of a financial advantage right now. I will say this. Betsy Dirksen Londrigan is the strongest fundraising candidate that he's ever had to face since he's been in Congress. So I think that will be the one difference maybe from the last couple of cycles.
It'll also be very interesting, Brian, as we look at this influx of female candidates, of women who are running for office. Mm-hmm. Certainly Betsy Dirksen Londrigan can also think about that. We were just talking about Marie Newman sort of riding that Emily's List wave. That's probably something you imagine she'll be capitalizing on and emphasizing during the November election.
Oh, I think she certainly will. Davis did defeat Ann Callis in 2014, a judge from the Metro East area. But frankly, Callis ended up not being as strong a candidate as her resume might have indicated, and Davis didn't have too much trouble in that race. I think this time around, it will be a little bit tougher
for him. And it's such a different conversation we're having now around women and politics. That's a very interesting race. It's a seat, as we said, that's been targeted by the Democratic Party as one they think they can win in the general election. We're going to speak with Representative Sherry Bustos about that coming up after the break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The 21st. Brian, thanks.
You're welcome.
Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. Thanks for listening. We're recapping last night's primary. One of the biggest trends we saw across the state was higher turnout than what's typical for a midterm primary, especially for Democrats. We're also seeing more women running for office than any other time in U.S. history. Last night, I caught up with Congresswoman Sherry Bustos. She's a Democrat from Illinois' 17th Congressional District, which includes parts of Peoria, Rockford, and the Quad Cities. She ran unopposed in her own primary, but she spent years trying to get more women elected through her Build the Bench program. We spoke shortly after J.B. Pritzker's victory speech last night. As we've said, turnout last night was higher than in previous midterm election primaries, so I started by asking her what she thought it meant to have that kind of voter turnout, especially for the Democratic Party.
I think it means that there's a lot of excitement, not just about J.B. Pritzker, but also about Democrats running all over the state in these congressional races, in the what's going on with the attorney general's race. There's a clear enthusiasm gap between the Democrats who turned out today and in early voting and with the Republican races. You know, a clear example of that is in downstate Illinois. We've got a candidate who I think is one of the best congressional candidates anywhere in the, not just in the state of Illinois, but in the country, Brendan Kelly, who will now be facing Mike Bost in the general election. I think it is a district that we can win back for the Democrats. I think in central Illinois, we have a shot at winning back that seat for the Democrats. In the Peter Roskam district, I think that's another seat that we have a good chance of winning back. Lauren Underwood just dominated out of east central part of the state of Illinois. So I think in November we have a great opportunity, we meaning Democrats, of winning back the U.S. House of Representatives and Illinois and the rest of the heartland. The path to the majority goes right through our state and through the Midwest.
Representative Bustos, I wanted to ask you about another we, and that's women. You played a very active role in a Building the Bench program that you started to get more women to run for office. You worked with women at all levels of government to run. Are you encouraged by the results that you've seen of that in this primary season across Illinois?
I'm very encouraged by it. And I'll give you a little history. When you're talking about the Build the Bench program that we started out of my campaign, it goes back an election cycle or maybe even before that. But the last election cycle at the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, I was the vice chair of recruitment and was involved with recruiting candidates all over the country to run for Congress. And what I noticed is that we had too many congressional districts where we really struggled to find candidates who were a good fit for their districts. And it occurred to me that we ought to be able to look at places like city councils and county boards and even library boards and school boards and at various levels of Democratic elected office holders and find great candidates. And we weren't always able to do that. So we started this program called Build the Bench, where we recruit people to go through the training. It's basically a one-day boot camp, and people, the Democratic prospective candidates, go through that program. They learn the fundamentals of how to run for office and how to win for office. And I have a particular passion to recruit women to run and young people and people from communities of color. And the reason my passion goes to those areas is because that is where we are so underrepresented in elected office all over, not just the state of Illinois, but all over the country. And so I'd like to change the makeup of elected office. And when we look at Congress, for example, only 20% of Congress are women. And I'm very pleased with the number of women that are running in Illinois and all over the country. We have a record number of women that are running for congressional seats. And, I hope that the makeup will look very, very different after November and when the new Congress is sworn in next January.
One last question for you this evening, Representative Bustos. You mentioned several Democratic candidates earlier who are running in all different parts of the state. And Illinois has so many different communities, as you've mentioned, whether we're talking about Chicago or more rural parts of the state. And as you said, of course, you're hoping as a Democrat to take back the House by winning everywhere. What should the Democratic Party stand for this November?
I think we should stand for offering hope and making sure that we are doing everything we can through our policies and what we vote on going forward to help families succeed. You know, especially when you're talking about some of the smaller rural blue-collar areas, you know, a lot of us hope that our kids, perhaps if they go away to school or if they learn a trade, we don't want them to move out of our state. We would like them to live in our communities so we can see our grandkids grow up, and we just want them to have a better life than our parents or that we've been able to have. And I think we've lost some of our faith that we can make that happen. But we've got the policies that are looking at things like improving our educational system, making sure that we don't just fight for new job creation, but jobs where people can support their families and earn a living, where, you know, people who used to be able to buy a new F-150 pickup truck every 4 or 5 years can do that again instead of, you know, see 250,000 miles roll on it and, you know, the vehicle falling apart. One of the people we talked to for a report that we put together about Democrats who have been successful in these rural and blue-collar and swing districts, when we asked her about what people want in their elected officials and what they want for their families, and this person said they, you know, really people want to be able to buy their kids the shoes they want instead of the shoes they need. And I think that just sums up what we want for our families. And we as Democrats, we do offer the right policies. We just have to tell our stories. And more importantly, we have to go to communities that might just have 200 people or 500 people and listen to them and make sure that we're fighting for them every day that we are in elected office. And I just think we're going to have a terrific November because of the caliber and the type of candidates that we have running all over this state and all over this country. And I feel very good about tonight, and I feel very good about our future, not just for the sake of the Democratic Party, but for the sake of our country. I think better days are ahead.
That's Representative Sherry Bustos. Thanks for speaking with us. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Nyla.
I caught up with Representative Bustos last night. She had no opponents in her primary for the 17th congressional district. Let's move across the state now and go south to Carbondale and also back to the DeKalb area as well. Sue Stevens is with us at our partner station WNIJ in DeKalb to talk about the 13th congressional district. Brad Palmer's with us from Carbondale the 16th congressional district. Brad Palmer's with us from Carbondale to discuss the 12th congressional district. There's lots of numbers here. Sorry, guys. I'm getting some numbers mixed up. Brad, Sue, welcome back to the 21st. Thanks for being with me.
Happy to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Brad, let's start with Carbondale. Representative Bustos mentioned Brendan Kelly, but let me start on the Republican side because incumbent Mike Bost faced a challenger, but won pretty easily there. Right, Brad?
Yeah, it was a race that... Admittedly, Mike Bost, I think, knew he was going to win. He faced a 27-year-old young man who'd never run for public office. He was a young man who admittedly was really in this race to get his name out there, maybe for future political endeavors, and Bost won the race easily with over 80% of the vote. So it was a race that Bost obviously had to show some respect to Nelson, but I think his main focus was always on November, feeling he was going to easily win this primary.
And tell us a little bit about Brendan Kelly, please.
Kelly is currently the St. Clair State's Attorney. He's a gentleman who's a U.S. Navy veteran. He's a graduate of the University of Notre Dame. He has a degree in government and international relations. He has really built his campaign, at least leading up to the primary yesterday, saying he wants to fight for the middle and lower classes, who he says have been forgotten, especially in the 12th district, which encompasses most of southwestern Illinois and even little parts further east. He says, as state's attorney, he's fought for the little people, so to speak, against big banks, big pharma, even against people in his own party who he didn't think were doing the right things for the little guy. So he's really focusing his campaign on saying he will fight for the middle and lower classes of this district.
Can you remind us a little bit about the 12th congressional district? This has been a district that voted very strongly for President Trump. As you said, probably as lots of incumbent Mike Bost has a lot of support here. It's interesting that Sherry Bustos, Representative Bustos, said that she feels Brendan Kelly is one of the strongest Democratic candidates in the nation. Can you remind us of what his chances might be given the demographics and voting patterns of this district?
Yeah, the 12th district is interesting. For decades, it was held by a Democrat. I mean, Jerry Costello held it for 20 years, and before that, it was in Democratic hands and was always assumed to be a very solid blue district. But over the last decade or so, it was slowly starting to morph into a bit of a red district. It's not considered totally red or totally blue. It's kind of a mixture of the two, and I think the reason why Kelly is considered a pretty formidable opponent for Bost is that he's actually been out fundraising him. Leading up through the primary, he was a gentleman who outraised Bost as far as funds go. He's got a lot of backing from the National Democratic Party. They see this as a vulnerable seat for the Republicans, especially because it had been in Democratic hands for so many years before Bost won it in 2014. They've really been putting a lot of money into this race. It's a race that's being watched nationally as one that could change hands party-wise. So Kelly has a lot of backing. He's a guy who's pretty sharp. I mean, he talks the talk. He has his points down, his issues down that he really focuses on, and seems to be able to get those points across pretty well. And he apparently did that in the primary, winning that very easily with 80% of the vote as well. So this is a race that I think people will be following closely for the next 7.5 months, and will be interested to see what happens in November.
Big issues for the race, I imagine, Brad, are jobs, jobs, and jobs.
It always is in this region. I mean, this is a region that has some of the most impoverished counties in the entire state, especially in the extreme southern portion of the district, which really runs, again, along the southwestern Illinois border with Missouri and even Kentucky in the southernmost areas. Those areas, for instance, in Alexander County, you have a community of Caro that has been highlighted nationally for just how impoverished it is, some of the issues they've had with public housing there. Those people are in desperate need of jobs and even housing. You have other counties that are also in that realm, and it's a district where Kelly has been specifically talking about high tech, bringing high tech companies to the region, taking advantage of maybe increasing a high speed rail, other modes of transportation to connect some of the southern portions of the region to northern portions of the Metro East and even the St. Louis area. He's specifically talked about that in ways maybe to help Southern Illinois University at Carbondale, which is suffering in financial situations like many of our public higher ed institutions are. He's talked about trying to connect the district more in modes of transportation, because that comes into play especially in the southern part of our district in terms of health care, access to health care. Some of the counties in the southern portion of the district do not have hospitals within their county. Some hospitals are 30 minutes to an hour away. So those are issues that people are really concerned about.
Brad Palmer is Morning Edition host at WSIU. He's a reporter as well. Let's go to Sue Stevens, who's with WNIJ in DeKalb. Sue, before I get to that 13th congressional district, I just want to ask you about, there was a vote for home rule status in the city of Rockford. Can you remind us of what happened there?
Well, it went down. People decided to reject it. It was about 53% no. A lot of time and money was spent on this referendum. A lot of the city leaders wanted it passed because Rockford hasn't had it since the early 1980s. They lost home rule power in a referendum then, and it turns out that people decided they didn't want it. And there was a lot of money put into it by realtors' organizations, which was pretty interesting. So now the city is trying to figure out their plan B when it comes to how to raise money for their budget, and they're looking at possibly a utility tax now because home rule didn't pass. We'll see what happens next.
Rockford was a home rule city until 1983, that's right, Sue?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, interesting. So we'll see what happens ahead there in Rockford. Let me ask you about the 16th Congressional District. That includes parts of Rockford, DeKalb, and the Illinois Valley. Adam Kinzinger is the incumbent. He won very easily over the challenger he was facing, correct?
Correct. He was challenged by conservative James Martyr, who was really pushing him on social issues and saying that he, you know, pulling out the term rhino for him. And last night, James Martyr was in Rockford and told our reporter Chase Kavanaugh that at least he feels like he was able to push. He's hoping he's pushed Adam Kinzinger to the right, making it clear how important some of the issues and how being more in line with President Trump is to the voters in the 16th district, according to James Martyr.
Right. It's interesting, this whole notion of rhino or Republican in name only, as James Martyr was defining it, was saying someone who supports President Trump. We've seen Representative Kinzinger express some independence from President Trump, especially mm-hmm. over military issues. Certainly that did not seem to have any effect on his popularity with voters yesterday evening.
No, it didn't. In fact, it's kind of, he was almost absent during this election. There were no debates or forums between those two. I was just looking to see what he had been tweeting about yesterday on Election Day, and he was tweeting about traumatic brain injuries and National Ag Day. So really, he was
just kind of kept doing his work, right? He was
just kept doing his thing.
So we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about the 16th Congressional District. Brad Palmer, I'm hoping you can stick around as well. As always, your questions or comments are welcome. If you want to give us a call, our phone number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-9455. Stick around as we continue to wrap up results from yesterday evening's electoral primary. You're listening to The 21st. Stay tuned.
The 21st is made possible by the Center for Advanced Studies MillerCom 18 Lecture Series, presenting Toward a Manifesto for Diverse Psychological Science, March 26th at 4 p.m. at Beckman Institute. Professor of Psychology Enrique Neblett will discuss incorporating diversity and the human experience into psychological science. cas.illinois.edu.
Thanks for tuning in to The 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We've been going all around the state as we do on this program, wrapping up last night's primary election results. Right now, my guests are Brad Palmer. He's a host at WSIU in Carbondale. He's also a reporter, along with reporter Sue Stevens from WNIJ in DeKalb. Sue, let's get back to the 16th Congressional District. As we mentioned, incumbent Adam Kinzinger won very easily. He will now face off against Sarah Dady. She's an immigration attorney from Rockford, Sue?
Yes, she is. And that's how I got to know her in the first place, was as her job as an immigration attorney. So as you imagine, expect to be hearing more about immigration from her as we get through this campaign. Although she did say when it comes to her priorities, she said last night, her number one priority is getting Adam Kinzinger into four debates. So we'll see how that goes as we get, you know, head toward the election. And then when it comes to issues, she's the first thing she told me was universal health care. That's what she wants as a businesswoman and also someone who lost her mother because of some problems with health care coverage. She wants universal health care, and we'll work toward that. Otherwise, jobs, as we always hear, for anywhere in the state of Illinois. Education, including college and college alternatives. And then protecting union rights. She said those are her priorities as we get this election kicked off now.
Sarah Dady, why for Sarah Dady is a debate important to her, Sue? Is it just because she wants a chance to face, as you mentioned, Adam Kinzinger didn't do any debates with James Martyr?
Yeah, absolutely. And as an attorney, she's a pretty good debater, too. So she does want to get out there. There's been a real clamor, I think, from people in this district. It's a big, diverse district. Going from Rockford, the 16th district it splits Rockford with Sherry Bustos. And this goes from the Wisconsin border all the way to Indiana, the suburbs, some of the suburbs of Chicago. So it's a very large district, a lot of different ideas, but once again, it's jobs. We've got manufacturing jobs people want. Also, there's a lot of farm area, so that's another interest. So I think, just getting out there and being able to see these two candidates go head-to-head, I'm kind of excited about it.
Last question for both of you. Brad, let's start with you. When you look at turnout and what you saw yesterday, what does that say to you about the November election? Brad?
There were slightly more votes cast in the Democratic primary than in the Republican primary, about 49,000 in the Democratic primary and about 38,000 in the Republican primary. Kelly received almost 40,000 votes compared to about 31,000 for Bost. Not a huge discrepancy, so it's hard maybe to determine what will happen in November based on that, but this is a district that, again, is kind of in the middle between red and blue, so this could be a very tight race and really one hard to predict. In fact, Cook Political Report's labeling it as a toss-up at this point in time. So I can't really draw any conclusions necessarily off of how the votes went yesterday, because both gentlemen, Bost and Kelly, won by such huge margins that it's kind of inconclusive, I think, at this point.
Right. And Sue, Sarah Dady didn't win by a huge margin. She had four candidates. She won by about 13 percentage points. What did the turnout tell you yesterday about the Rockford area?
The people are excited about this election, or at least wanted to have their say in it. And I think home rule really got people to the polls in Rockford. Turnout was about 30% in Rockford. And the fact that Sarah Dady is from Rockford, so she's a well-known person in Rockford, helped her campaign too. So I think just the turnout was pretty decent. This is the 16th district, though, has been a Republican district since the early 90s. It was when the last time there was a Democrat in that position. And it's been gerrymandered since then to be even more Republican. So it will be interesting to see how this goes. This is the first time there's really been this strong of a challenger to a Republican in this district.
That's a theme that we've been hearing all hour. That's Sue Stevens with WNIJ. I want to thank WSIU's Brad Palmer as well. Thanks for being with me.
Thanks
so much. Always a pleasure, Nyla.
And so what does this mean for the future of the Democrat and Republican parties? That's what we're going to end the hour with my next two guests. Pat Brady is the former chair of the Illinois GOP. Dave Lundy is the president of Aileron Communications and a Democratic political analyst. Pat, Dave, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Glad to be here. Hey, David, how you doing?
Hey, Pat, how are you?
Let me start with you, please. As we look at and as you look at Governor Rauner, let's just start with state politics. And we look at the very strong, very close victory that he pulled off over Jeannie Ives. What does that say to you about what you think the future of the Republican Party is in Illinois?
Well, you know, it's an active and vibrant primary, and the governor acknowledged that he got the message from some of the conservatives, a more conservative element of the party, that he understands where they're coming from, and he'll move forward. But on the other side, 51% of Democrat voters didn't vote for their nominee. So I think both parties really have a problem, not a problem, but there are issues on the fringes of the party, or the right or the left of the parties. And we saw that up here with Marie Newman almost beating Dan Lipinski in some of the races up north of I-80, where the progressive wing of the Democratic Party is really starting to take control. And that will be problematic for them, just like it is if the far right takes control of the Republican Party.
I want to play a little bit of Bruce Rauner talking yesterday evening about, as you said, Pat Brady, as you said, saying he got the message.
To those of you around the state of Illinois who wanted to send me a message, let me be clear. I have heard you. I have traveled the state, and I have listened to you. While we disagree on some things, let's commit to working together on what unites us, the reforms we need to save our state.
It's Governor Bruce Rauner yesterday evening in a speech that he gave actually before State Representative Jeannie Ives conceded. Pat Brady, can I just ask, as you hear Governor Rauner saying he heard people, he can say that, but I guess the reality is what do you think he needs to do to bring Republican voters out to support him? And he had a pretty, you know, he had independent voters that supported him last time around. What does he need to do to try to get those votes?
Well, let's look at it this way. Jeannie Ives, his opponent in this race, was asked on Friday before the election, of the 44 things that the governor ran on, all the reforms, term limits, tax reform, whatever, what do you disagree with? And she said nothing. So Jeannie Ives tapped into the social conservative wing of the party, who didn't like a couple of Governor Rauner's actions related to HB 40 and the quote-unquote sanctuary city. So I think that what he needs to do is appeal to those folks in the party and say, hey, we much more unites us. We agree on much more than divides us. And if you let the Democrats have complete and total control of the state, none of the policies that we believe as conservatives will ever be enacted. And we heard last night from JB, we're pretty much guaranteed a tax increase. So I think that's what he needs to do. I think that's a message that resonates across the spectrum, and he'll draw some independence. And I think some of the actions he took in the last couple months that really irritated the social conservatives are things that will help him in the general election.
Dave Lundy, jump in here, and I should ask you, in interest of full transparency, you are not working for J.B. Pritzker's campaign now, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We do represent his businesses and have for about 18 years, but we have nothing to do with the campaign.
What do you make, to Pat's point, of the votes that Governor Rauner has taken on HB 40 and the Trust Act? The Trust Act was written with the work of law enforcement throughout the state to kind of hammer out what law enforcement will do in regards to detention and deportation and federal authorities. Are those votes enough to bring any Democrats to Governor Rauner's camp here?
No. No, look, and I appreciate, Pat trying to put his best face on this, on the disastrous performance of the governor against an significantly underfunded candidate and, frankly, a fringe candidate in Jeannie Ives. But the schisms in the Republican Party are real. They're significant. I was on the air last night with our old friend Chris Roebling, who is just part of that contingent in the Republican Party that will never vote for Bruce Rauner again, former Rauner supporters. These people are not just upset about the HB 40 and the Trust Act, et cetera. They're done. They're done with Bruce Rauner. And while they recognize that that J.B. Pritzker is not going to be the kind of governor they want, they just don't feel they can trust Bruce Rauner. And I just think that that presents a real significant problem in terms of bringing the party together, whereas you didn't really have significant policy differences on the Democratic side. You had personality differences, and there were the questions about, wealth versus non-wealth, et cetera.
Well, Dave, let me push back against you here, though, because in terms of maybe not perhaps policy differences, but I think there are some schisms in the Democratic Party as well when you have people arguing about the Bernie Sanders side of the party versus others. Are you concerned at all when we look at moving forward? And I'm not just talking about for the governor's race now, but for congressional candidates as well, that the Democratic Party in Illinois and the candidates that are now going to be fielded on the Democratic ticket I'm not sure what they represent in terms of what the Democratic Party stands for at the moment nationally.
Well, that's a great question. I will only point to 2010, 2014. The Republicans ran on simply obstructing Barack Obama, and that was enough to have historic wins in both of those years. I think that there, first of all, you have the Democratic wave. You start with the Democratic wave that's been evident around the country. You add a level of antipathy towards Governor Rauner because of what he has done and how he has punished the state with his policies. And his obstructionism for the last 3.5 years. And he's literally less popular in Illinois than Donald Trump is, if you can even imagine that. So I think that the energy on the Democratic Party and the thing that will unite us all is in beating Bruce Rauner and trying to move the state forward again. I mean, I think there's an opportunity to take Illinois in a different direction. It's interesting listening to the governor, and I've heard him in private settings, I've heard him in public settings, and I have no idea how the next 4 years is going to be different than the last 4 years if you have the same general constellation of power brokers.
Pat Brady, let me impose that same question to you about the Republican Party, especially as we look at the slate of candidates now, and I'm talking about congressionally as well. What do you, as we go towards the fall, what do you think that says about Republican? What does it say about the party, the Republican candidates that will be fielded from Illinois?
Well, congressionally, we have a real solid delegation from Rodney Davis, John Shimkus, Darren LaHood, Adam Kinzinger, Peter Roskam. I think we have a very solid delegation. The tax cut that they gave people in this state and people in this country is becoming more and more popular every day. And I think they will be fine. Here in the state of Illinois, the reality is this. If we don't reelect Bruce Rauner, we're giving the keys to the kingdom back to Mike Madigan. If Mike Madigan gets in, guaranteed, we're going to have another tax increase. We're not going to get any property tax relief. We're not going to get term limits. These are things that people in the state agree on. We're just going to get more of the same failed Democratic policies that we've seen for the last 15 years. So I think the people in the state enjoy some kind of check on Mike Madigan. And J.B. Pritzker, the first thing he did is went down and asked Mike Madigan if he could run, and he's Mike Madigan's guy. So that was going to be – Madigan's going to be central in this campaign, and that do you really want to turn this state back over completely to Mike Madigan's control, because it really hasn't worked very well for us in the last 30 years.
All right, let me give you each one last – if you can answer this question in one last sentence because we're almost out of time. Let's start with you, Dave Lundy. What should the Democratic Party stand for this fall?
Democratic Party should stand for moving Illinois in a positive direction, growing our economy, and restoring Illinois to the proud place that we once stood in the country and that we no longer do under the legacy of Bruce Rauner.
Pat Brady.
We need job creation. We agree. I think Dave and I probably agree on where we want to take the state. It's just how we want to do it. The Democrats want to tax and spend. We want to create more taxpayers, not more taxes.
That's former Illinois GOP Chair Pat Brady. I want to thank him, along with Dave Lundy, President of Aileron Communications. Dave, Pat, thanks for being with me. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Alice.
See you, Dave.
Thanks. See you, Pat.
That does it for us today. You can always find past shows on the NPR One app. Search for the 21st. All of that's at our website, 21stshow.org. Thanks to WGN Radio for their audio of campaigns from yesterday. And we've got a great team of 21st staff who have been working very hard during this entire primary season on all of our coverage, including a very late night on air last night. So I want to say a special thanks to them today. Alan Montesilio, Robin Lynn, Libby Foster, Scott Cameron, and of course our engineers, Jason Croft and Steve Moore. And today we also have to say thank you and goodbye to our intern, Grace Stetson, who's worked with us on the 21st since last fall. Today is her last day with us. Thanks, Grace. We wish you the best of luck. I'm Nyla Boodoo. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.